This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents The Thing About Luck by Cynthia Katahata, read by Joy Osmansky. For Sammy, always and forever. Chapter 1. Koun is good luck in Japanese, and one year my family had none of it. We were cursed with bad luck. Bad luck chased us around, pointing her bony finger. We got 7 flat tires in 6 weeks. I got malaria, one of 1,500 cases in the United States that year. And my grandmother's spine started causing her excruciating pain. Furthermore, random bad smells emanated from we knew not where, and my brother Jazz became cursed with invisibility. Nobody noticed him except us. His best friend had moved away, and he did not know a single boy to hang around with. Even our cousins looked the other way when they saw him at our annual Christmas party. They didn't even seem to be snubbing my brother. They just didn't see him. The thing about luck is that it's like a fever. You can take fever meds and lie in bed and drink chicken broth and sleep 17 hours in a row, but basically your fever will break when it wants to break. In early April, my parents got a call from Japan. 3 elderly relatives were getting ready to die and wanted my parents to take care of them in their last weeks and months. There was nothing surprising about this. This was just the way our year was going. It was April 25th when my grandparents and Jazz delivered my parents to the airport to catch their plane to Japan. I stayed at home because the type of malaria I'd gotten was called airport malaria. Airport malaria is when a rogue mosquito from, say, Africa has been inadvertently carried into the United States on a jet. This infected mosquito might bite you. I got bit in Florida last summer, and I lived in Kansas. The chances that I would get malaria from going to the airport in Kansas were remote, but I'd grown so scared of mosquitoes that sometimes I didn't even like stepping outside. It really wasn't fair. I was only 12, and yet already I was scared of the entire outside world. During the 1940s, there were thousands of malaria cases in the United States. Then in the 50s, the experts thought malaria here was eradicated, but every so often, someone still caught it. Sometimes you would get your picture in the newspaper. My picture was even in Time magazine. Oba-chan and Ji-chan, my grandmother and grandfather on my mother's side, were both 67 and lived with us in Littlefield, Kansas. Oba-chan was more formal than Ba-chan, but it was what she wanted Jazz and me to call her. When harvest season arrived in May of our horrible year, Ji-chan planned to come out of retirement to work as a combine driver for a custom harvesting company called Parker Harvesting Incorporated. I'll explain about custom harvesting in a minute or two. My grandmother would work as a cook for the same harvester, with me as her helper. We'd all worked for the Parkers before, but it was the first time my parents wouldn't be there, which meant only my grandparents would be paying the mortgage during harvest this year. I didn't quite understand what paying the mortgage meant, but apparently it was a constant struggle. Another phrase that came up a lot was, paying down the principal, as in, if we could just pay down the principal, I'd feel like we were getting somewhere. I used to think that paying down the principal meant they wanted to bribe the principal at one of my future schools, like they would give this principal some money, and then someday the principal would let me go into high school despite my iffy grades. Anyway, as soon as my grandparents got home from dropping off my parents, changes were implemented. My mother had told Jazz, "Don't worry, you'll make a friend when you least expect it." My grandparents were more proactive. It seems Oba-chan and Ji-chan had a bright idea they'd been hiding from us. Oba-chan made Jazz and me sit on the floor in front of the coffee table, while she and Ji-chan sat on the couch. "We having a meeting party," she announced regally. "We invite boys we will consider for a friendship with Jazz." She turned to me. "Make a list with him. I no interfere." "A list of people to invite?" I asked. My Doberman, Thunder, tried to push himself between me and the table. I pushed back and we just sat there, leaning hard into each other.
"No, a list," she snapped at me.
Wasn't that what I had just said? I finally got up and moved to a different side of the table. Still unsure what she wanted, I got a pen and paper.
"Pencil, you may need to erase."
I got a pencil and readied myself. "Should I number the list?" I asked. My grandfather nodded sagely.
"Agenda," he said. "List for boys we invite, agenda for party." "No interfere," Oba-chan said to Ji-chan. "You interfere first, no?"
Oba-chan and Ji-chan had been married for 49 years, and my mother always said that after that number of years, you no longer had to be polite all the time. It sometimes seemed that in our house, I was the only one who had to use my manners. Jazz didn't have to because he had issues. When I'm 67 in 55 years, I suppose that I would finally be able to dispense with my manners. I thought Ji-chan and Oba-chan talked to each other the way that they did because they'd had an arranged marriage. Oba-chan said that if I had an arranged marriage, I would never give or receive a broken heart. If I grew up beautiful, I would never break any man's heart, and if I grew up plain, nobody would break my heart. If I rebelled and wanted love, however, all bets were off. Broken hearts would come my way like locusts.
"Summer, you in the rah-rah land."
She never said la-la land, and I never corrected her. I hurriedly wrote number one on the paper in the left-hand margin.
"No number," Oba-chan said. "Arrange by a time. I have to tell you everything."
Ji-chan picked up the paper, studied the number one, and set the paper back down.
"I agree. Arrange by a time."
I erased the number one and wrote in 1 o'clock p.m. I made sure not to flick the eraser bits onto the floor, because if I did, Oba-chan would be so upset that she might fall over dead.
"Noon," barked Oba-chan.
I made the change.
"Continue. First write day on top of paper in the big letter. Day for meeting is next Saturday. Then continue."
"What would you like to do at noon?" I asked Jazz. "Play with Legos. I want a Lego party."
"Not a really party," Ji-chan said.
He was cleaning his teeth with the floss he always carried in his shirt pocket. Sometimes he flossed during dinner right at the table. See what I mean about manners? Can you imagine what your parents would do if you started to floss at the dinner table? But he constantly seemed to have something between his teeth.
"More of a meeting than a party," he said. "Noon lunchtime," Oba-chan said. "You feed the boys first. Boys are always hungry. Never mind, I no interfere. But no food, no friend." "What I just say?"
"No food, no friend," Jazz and I repeated. Oba-chan sometimes made us repeat something she had just said to prove we were listening. Jazz turned to Oba-chan. "Oba-chan, will you make sandwiches?"
"Someone make? I her mentor."
I found myself already starting to feel stressed. What if I made ham sandwiches and the boys wanted tuna fish? What if I used regular bread and one of the boys needed gluten-free, like my friend Alyssa had to eat because of her allergies? What if I used too much mayonnaise? Ugh! Still, next to noon, I wrote, "Sandwich eating." Ji-chan pounded on the paper.
"Lunch," he cried out passionately. Not the sandwich eating. It called lunch.
He clutched at his heart.
You kids go to kill me.
Apparently, about once every couple weeks, he thought we were going to kill him. What kind of sandwiches would you like? I asked Jazz, still worrying about those. I don't want to make the wrong kind. I'll ask around at school. I can't believe this is happening. I'm really going to have a meeting party. He got up to look at himself in a mirror over our fake fireplace and said, You are going to have a meeting party. Ji-chan was now standing and staggering away from us with his hands on his heart. Jazz and I watched him calmly.
I die, scatter ashes, Ji-chan said. No keeping a hole in a wall at the cemetery. You hear me?
Yes, Ji-chan, we said.
Good, then I die happy.
I wrote down Legos, 1 o'clock. My brother had approximately $1,000 worth of Legos. Seriously, I counted once. Legos were one of our biggest expenses and the only thing we splurged on.
Good plan, Ji-chan said. That's brilliant.
I couldn't tell if he was being sarcastic as he peered over my shoulder from his death throes. How long is the meeting party? Jazz asked. I think most parties are 2 hours, I answered. So I guess that's the end of the agenda? Nobody answered, so I made a line underneath the agenda and laid down the pencil. Who should I invite? Jazz asked. Should it be just kids who I think might come, or should it be kids who might not come, but on the other hand, you never know? Should it just be kids in my class, or should it be all the kids in my grade? Should it be boys and girls, or just boys? Should it be only kids who might not even know who I am, even though I know who they are? Should it... Ji-chan held up his palm to quiet Jazz.
Invite the whole fifth grade, he said wisely.
We all looked at him, and he nodded.
That way, hurt nobody's feelings.
Jazz stared at him doubtfully for a moment, but then his face turned from doubtful to ecstatic. I could almost hear him thinking, Wow, the whole school might come to my meeting party. Then my grandparents wanted Jazz to draw invitations. He was a good artist in kind of a weird way. Like, he never drew pictures of anything recognizable, but if you needed a totally psychedelic design, he was your man. But he wanted to buy invitations because he thought they were more official. We ended up driving 30 miles to a 99-cent store in a larger town. After loud and passionate debate, we bought several boxes of dinosaur invitations. On Monday, Jazz distributed them to all the kids in the fifth grade at his school. So as not to jinx the party, we weren't supposed to talk to one another about it. But we could pray all we wanted in front of several sprigs of silk cherry blossoms on the coffee table. We did this the night before the party. Cherry blossoms, as the harbingers of spring, were important to Japanese farmers. My grandmother mumbled in Japanese as I knelt beside her. I could make out a word occasionally, like unmei or destiny. As Oba-chan muttered on, I prayed in my head, Please let my brother have a successful meeting party. Let the kids have fun. Let him make at least one friend, preferably two. Please, please, please. That night, I drew in my notebook like I always did. I didn't draw very well, so each picture took me weeks. I copied them from photographs of mosquitoes I found. One time I thought I had a perfect drawing, so I sent it to a mosquito expert, and this is what he said.
Looks like an anopheles, but the proboscis is hairy and the palps look like a thin line, so this is not a good representation, but could easily be changed. Make palps more than a line and get rid of bristle on mouth parts, and you have an anopheles female. The problem is that most, but not all, anopheles in the U.S. tend to have spots on their wings, which these drawings lack.
Wow. epic fail on my part. It was strange because I knew that if I had been almost killed by a car, I wouldn't have become fascinated with cars. If I had almost drowned, I wouldn't have become obsessed with water. But the more I looked at mosquitoes, even the same type that had infected me, the more delicate they seemed. Fragile, even. And yet, one had almost taken my life. It was like now we couldn't be separated. I mean, if I saw one on my arm, I wouldn't hesitate to smash it or even run screaming down the highway. They terrified me. But still, we were inseparable. Chapter 2. Three boys from Jazz's class had said they could come to the party. Nobody else had RSVP'd. But it didn't matter. Three boys. We were so, so excited. At 11 on Saturday morning, my friend Melody came over in case we needed help. "What should I do?" Mel asked Oba-chan.
"Vacuum a living room."
"Oba-chan," I said, "she's a guest."
"She here to work."
I shook my head at Mel to let her know she didn't have to vacuum. But we couldn't have a for real conversation with Oba-chan and Ji-chan listening. So we just talked about the coming harvest. Let me finally explain about custom harvesters. Many wheat farmers don't cut their own wheat. They bring in custom harvesters like the Parkers, who hire independent contractors like my family to drive the giant combines that cut the wheat. They also hire drivers of big rigs to haul the wheat to grain elevators. Grain elevators are usually tall, reinforced concrete buildings that you may have seen but never really thought about. The elevators are where the grain is stored. The custom harvesters are the ones who own or lease the really, really expensive equipment. They're usually family-owned companies. A new combine can cost $350,000, so you need to have really good credit to get a loan from the bank to buy or lease your equipment. Shoot, our house cost a quarter of that. During the harvest season, these companies travel from farm to farm, from Texas to Montana or North Dakota, and even up to Canada for some harvesters. Anyway, enough about custom harvesters, for now. I made two chicken breast sandwiches, and Mel made two. Every so often, I slipped Thunder a piece of chicken, so he sat his best sit as I cut the sandwiches in half and inserted toothpicks topped with colored cellophane into each half. Then I put a sprig of parsley on each plate, which is kind of fancy, but I wanted to make a good impression. Melody, Oba-chan, Ji-chan, and I sat at the kitchen table waiting while Jazz sat in the living room.
"Summer, get your hair under control," Oba-chan said. "You look like a Yoko Ono 1969.
I had the bad luck of being in that small minority of Asian people with frizzy hair. Usually I wore it in braids, but I hadn't done that today. I braided my hair in the bathroom. Melody came with me. "I have a bad feeling about this whole party thing," I said.
"What do you mean?" Mel asked.
"I don't know. At least we're going on harvest pretty soon. Kids are less snotty on harvest. They're desperate for someone to play with. Me, I'm mostly worried that everyone at school will forget me."
"I won't forget you if you promise you won't forget me," Mel said.
"Deal," I said.
"Deal,"
she responded. So at least I would have one friend to come back to. We hadn't gone on harvest the previous year because my parents had found local work, so this would be my first harvest since I got sick. Lately, I'd been lying in bed at night, thinking on the one hand about all the mosquitoes I would see on harvest, and on the other hand, what it would do to my health to be smearing on the insecticide DEET every night for several months. Supposedly, DEET was known for not being bad for humans, but whenever I first put it on, Thunder didn't like to be near me. With my hair braided, Mel and I checked on Jazz in the living room. He was sitting on the couch wearing his favorite t-shirt, which was neon green. When noon came and went, I put the plates into the refrigerator. I went to check on Jazz again. His hands were folded in his lap, and he was staring straight ahead. There was no clock in the living room, so he may not have known that it was 10 after 12.
Back at the kitchen table, we waited some more. At 20 past noon, Oba-chan said,
"Why say come when the no come? Why say yes when the mean no?"
I looked down at the flecks of silver in the kitchen table. Jazz had once counted every fleck on the table. There were 3,412. That was just the kind of boy he was, and that was why he had no friends. I went to peek at my brother again. His hands were still folded in his lap, but now his jaw was hanging open. My brother was small and stocky, like a 4-foot-tall weightlifter. He was built exactly like my grandfather, a rectangle with a head on top. It was disconcerting to talk to Jazz because his eyes had a strange, unwavering quality. He was a very serious kiddo, but I had seen him smile. I had heard him laugh, so I knew he could be happy sometimes. I started to feel furious at the boys in Jazz's class. Were they completely heartless? Finally, at 12:45, my grandmother's back slumped with defeat. I had never seen her like this before. Ji-chan flossed his teeth as if nothing special were going on.
"What the Jazz doing?" Oba-chan asked.
"Just sitting in the living room with his mouth hanging open," I answered. "He's hardly moved." At 1 o'clock, my grandfather laid down his floss and declared,
"Nobody coming. Let's eat the sandwich. Let's celebrate.
Nobody could think of anything to celebrate, so Ji-chan just got to his feet and took the sandwiches out of the fridge.
"Go get your brother."
I walked reluctantly into the living room where Jazz sat stoically. "Ji-chan says we should eat." Then I said it again. He looked at his feet. "Why doesn't anybody like me?" he asked. I thought of saying, "You have a bad temper and you're weird." He had such a bad temper that when he was angry, he sometimes banged his head on a wall or on whatever was handy. And he was weird because he would do strange things, like one time when he started singing a song in the middle of a test. My mother loved to tell that story because she thought it was cute, but I doubted the kids in his class thought it was cute. But I knew now wasn't the time for honesty. "You had a friend, but he moved away. That wasn't your fault. You'll make another one." "Connor Foster smells, and he even brags that he takes only one bath a week, and even he has a couple of friends," Jazz went on, now looking at me directly. I hated all the boys in Jazz's class. In my class, the boys were nicer. They did not shun anyone. But then I remembered Jensen, who didn't have a single friend that I knew of. I had rarely given him a thought, but now my heart went out to him. He was long and lanky, and he always held his chin slightly up so you could see in his nostrils. And it was hard to explain, but there was something about him that kind of repelled everyone. It was something about the way he moved, not in smooth, normal strokes like most people, but rather kind of jerky, as if he were part robot. Right then and there, I vowed to say something to him one day. Even if it was only hello, it would acknowledge that he was there. Jazz stood up. "Okay, let's eat." Everybody took half a sandwich, along with some potato chips. We ate silently. Jazz was a focused eater, just as he was focused with about everything he did. He stared down his food as if eating were a fight to the finish, and he chewed so vigorously that my parents worried he might crack his teeth.
"Boys need the red meat to grow, not chicken," Oba-chan finally said, not sharply but weakly, as if she had been defeated today.
I think she loved Jazz more than she loved me, but at that moment, I didn't mind. Jazz needed all the love he could get. Chapter 3. Nothing more happened as far as making friends for Jazz, but a few weeks later, as I walked into class on my last day before we left for harvest, for some reason, my eyes rested on Jensen. I remembered vowing to say hello to him, so I cheerfully called out, Hi, Jensen.
Several people looked at me like, what are you doing saying hello to Jensen of all people? Jensen? Jensen glared at me suspiciously, then said, shut up. Wow, I didn't expect that. People were still looking at me and I felt my face grow hot. I thought about what Jensen had just said. He must have been incredibly lonely to respond that way. I heard one boy saying to another, hey, Summer likes Jensen. Even though I knew Jensen was lonely, now I was annoyed at him. I was just trying to be friendly, I called out. And I was just trying to say shut up, Jensen shot back. And now everybody was laughing at me. I knew nobody would remember any of this in September when I got back. Still, when I took my seat, my face was burning. I got called on 4 times that day. I had to solve an equation with 2 unknowns on the board, read a page out loud, explain what an element was, and define ethical versus moral. Boy, I was glad to be free when the bell rang. After school, I walked with some friends to where the school bus stopped. The ones who didn't take the bus hugged me goodbye. When the bus came, I sat next to Melody as usual. Then I don't know what possessed me, but I wanted to try to be nice to Jensen one more time. He was sitting alone, as if people were scared that if they sat next to him, some of his unpopularity might rub off on them, which it probably would. But I figured I had loyal friends, so I could afford to lose a couple of popularity points. I got up, walked straight back, and sat right there next to him. I felt his leg against mine, so I moved over a bit in the opposite direction. We're going away for harvest tomorrow, I said pleasantly. He looked at me with annoyance and said, you again? Yeah, I just wanted to sit here and, like, talk or something. I saw several kids, including Jazz, watching me curiously. I couldn't think of what to say next. I finally came up with, I like your shirt. Which was a ridiculous thing to say because his shirt was heavy plaid flannel, even though it was warm out. He thought for a second. I don't know what's going on, but I've known you since first grade, and I don't think you've ever spoken a word to me. So thanks for whatever you're trying to do, but bug off. Well, that hadn't turned out very agreeably. Then we came to my stop, and my friends were hugging me, and we were saying goodbye. See you, I called out before I stepped off of the bus. When I turned to head home, Thunder was sitting near the bush where he always waited for me. I walked with him a ways, then stopped in the middle of a bunch of weeds and sat down and rolled my head around to stretch my neck. I felt all tense. I didn't know why. What are you doing? Jazz said behind me. At least people didn't mind sitting next to him. In that way, he was better off than Jensen. I'm de-stressing, I said. De-stressing was what my dad did all the time. For instance, if you bothered him while he was watching sports on TV, he'd say, not now, honey. I'm de-stressing. Jazz shrugged and walked toward our house. After de-stressing, I went inside. Ji-chan had stretched a big map across the kitchen table to show us our route. This season, we would be traveling from Texas to Oklahoma, back to Kansas, to Colorado, and then to the Dakotas. If there was one thing I hated, it was road trips. It wasn't that I found road trips boring. It was just that I would be trapped with my grandmother and Jazz for hours at a time. I mean, I love them, but thinking of spending all that time with them made me crazy. My grandfather was different. I could ride with him all day, no problem. For me, taking off time from school would be sort of wonderful and awful at the same time. Wonderful because I hated schoolwork. And awful because my mother had told me that a lot would change for my entire class over the summer between 6th and 7th grades. And whatever these changes were, I wouldn't be there for them. When we studied the civil rights movement that took place about 100,000 years earlier in the 1960s, we heard Sam Cooke singing A Change Is Gonna Come, which was my favorite song in the world, or at least my second favorite. I didn't have a favorite, but I liked to reserve that space just in case a song came along that was the actual best song in the world. Anyhow, I wondered if I would ever understand these mysterious changes that were coming for my class, or whether I would get left behind. I didn't want to become a reject just because of a bunch of wheat. And I already missed my parents. Oba-chan was so much more strict than my mother or my father. She told us what to eat and drink and how to live. In Japan, her family had a plum tree in their backyard. She was convinced of the healing power of umeboshi, Japanese salty plums. They're difficult to eat because they're so sour and salty. She ate them like candy, spitting the seeds expertly into a bowl. Spitting seeds like that would have gotten me quite a scolding, but as I said, she didn't have to use her manners anymore because she was so old. I didn't like umeboshi, so this was a mark against me, Japanese-ness-wise. Still, I was required to eat 2 pickled plums a day. And I had to wear rubber gloves whenever I did the dishes. Even at Oba-chan's age, she had beautiful hands. She often held them in front of herself to admire them. The gloves made my hands sweaty, but if she caught me with no gloves on, she would say, "Even if I have ugly fish for face, someone would marry me for my hands." "But you had an arranged marriage," I once pointed out.
"No talk back, or I ground you."
I gathered the schoolwork my present and future teachers had given me into a binder. Binders are a great organizational tool. My finished mosquito drawings and the matching original photographs took up one binder. Then I had a binder for all my schoolwork and another binder to hold new photographs of mosquitoes. Supposedly, I was going to have to spend 3 hours a day on my schoolwork. Ha ha! I had already done some of it so that I would have free days. And teachers weren't that strict about work they gave you when you went away on harvest. Once I had returned from harvest and not done any of my homework, and the teachers barely blinked an eye. One good thing about harvest is that there are always other kids around who belong to drivers, custom harvesters, or farmers. I had made friends that I'd stayed pen pals with, and even Jazz had made a friend 1 year, a boy as focused and intense as he was. I was surprised that there could be 2 such boys in the world. There were probably others as well. I wish they could all meet one another and form a club called the Intense Boys Association. The night before we left, Jazz was really excited as we lay in bed. He had the bunk above mine. He was hoping he would make a friend during harvest.
"Wouldn't it be great if I make 2 friends?" he said. "That would be cool. What if I make 3? I've never had 3 friends at the same time before."
Actually, he had never had 2 friends at the same time either. He became quiet then, but I knew he wasn't asleep. He was thinking about these 3 imaginary friends. I hoped he did make 3, I really did. But thinking about it made me get a small pain in my stomach, because what was most likely to happen is that he would end up by himself a lot, talking to himself, playing with plastic soldiers, building with Legos, and watching movies. If you bothered him while he was playing with his soldiers, he might fly into a rage. You had to wait until he was taking a break. The hall light went on, and Ji-chan came into the bedroom. He pulled up the chair from my desk.
"Tonight, I tell you the story of a weed," he said. "One day, when I a boy, I pulling weeds in Orange Grove. Day hot, many weed, back hurt. Bad day. Weed came from all over the night before. Suddenly, more weed than I ever see. Weed my special enemy. I hate it more than anything. I have a many nightmare about weed. But that day, I find special weed I never see before. My mother scold me, but I take weed roots carefully out, and I leave a field and put my special weed in a jar of water. Then, after work, I plant it in the wet soil. Every day, I take care of that weed. It grow as tall as me,
and that year we have a best-tasting orange crop ever. We raise the price because everyone wants our oranges. So I want you to remember, always keep an eye open for a special weed. You both special weed. Oyasumi.
Oyasumi nasai, Ji-chan, we said.
Chapter 4. From our home in Littlefield, Kansas, we had to drive across the state to Susanville, Kansas, to meet up with the Parker harvesting crew. My parents had worked for the Parkers twice, once 2 years ago and once 3 years ago. The second time we were short on money, and they paid us for the first month before we'd done any work. That's the kind of people they are. It was still dark when we set out in our rattly old Ford pickup. That thing was older than I was. We'd eaten a quick breakfast of oatmeal and 2 umeboshi each. I just pulled on a pair of jeans. I was also slathered in controlled release DEET. That was why Thunder didn't lay his head on my lap like he usually did. The company that made the DEET said they used an extra refining process that almost eliminated the smell. I'd grown used to it, but it was apparently too much for Thunder. Ji-chan sort of turned off whenever he drove. He didn't talk much and kept the radio on low. Once in a while he came to life as if somebody had flipped an on switch. As for Jazz, he was blowing giant bubblegum bubbles over and over. Look, he said, I can blow a bubble the exact same size every time. On his lap sat a Lego apartment building he'd been gluing together as he built it. He could have just put it in the truck bed, but he said that it was his most precious possession. End of argument. Thunder was curled up on the back seat beside me. I opened my window. The air was perfectly lukewarm, but I knew when we got to Texas that would change. When I checked the weather channel before we left, it said it might hit 100 degrees there. Thunder lifted his head and took a big breath, closing his eyes and, I swear, smiling. I stared out the window. The wheat fields were black in the early morning darkness. I wondered who'd be cutting those. Maybe it would be us as we swung back north. We drove past mile after mile of wheat, soybean, cattle, and sunflower farms. One of my favorite things was driving through Kansas when both the wild and cultivated sunflowers were in bloom. I liked the wild ones better, the clouds hovering over the tangle of yellow. They would still be in bloom in the fall. Then I heard Oba-chan growling. It was her sign that the pain in her back had become unbearable. Without a word, Ji-chan pulled over to the side of the road. He had barely stopped the truck when Oba-chan got out and lay flat on her back on the shoulder of the highway. She lay down like that several times a day, sometimes for hours. Ji-chan grabbed the flashlight from the glove compartment and we all stepped outside. Thunder sniffed at Oba-chan and then looked at me, as if he knew something about her that he couldn't communicate to us. We stood around for 20 minutes or so doing nothing but watching. That kind of standing around occurred sometimes in the country, where you were far from medical care. You had to kind of gather around and evaluate. Oba-chan looked bad, but I'd seen her worse. She even wore a slight smile, as if she was thinking of something pleasant like me getting all A's or Jazz finding a friend. She had just recently stopped dyeing her hair jet black, so I could see the white roots like a halo around her face. Then her smile faded and she said, "We supposed to be there before 6. She reached out her arms without saying anything more, and Jazz and I each took a hand and pulled her up. Back in the car, she said,
"I think I die this year, maybe this month." "I die first," Ji-chan replied. "Japanese women live to 90s. I die first. You eat many mandarin oranges as a child, they make you live longer, vitamin C. You drink more green tea, You live longer.
They continued like this for several minutes, at the end of which I wasn't sure who the matter was settled in favor of. Personally, I planned to live until I was 103, like my great-grandmother on my father's side had. All she did toward the end was watch TV, like it was more important than the real people around her. But there was a lot of good stuff on TV, so it wasn't such a terrible last few years. We drove quietly, except for Jazz, who popped his perfect bubbles over and over. For some reason, that started to make me crazy.
"Can you stop popping your gum so much, please?" I asked him politely. "Make me."
"You are so immature." He gave me a hard, angry look, and then I was already unbuckling my seatbelt as he started pounding the side of his head on his window, his Lego building tottering on his lap. I wrapped my arms around him and squeezed so he wouldn't hurt himself. I had learned that when you're trying to hold someone still, you had to concentrate on squeezing, just as you had to concentrate when you did math or English. If you tried to do it with just your strength and not your mind, you would fail. In fact, Ji-chan taught me to meditate partly because he thought that would help my concentration whenever I had to hold Jazz back. After a couple of minutes, he calmed down. Ji-chan had pulled over, and he and Oba-chan were watching. Ji-chan said sadly,
"You're lucky to have each other. Why fight?"
"All I did was say he was immature," I said. "Alyssa says that all the time to her brother."
"You're not even human," Jazz cried out. "You're nothing but a smelly deep bomb. Smell face."
I set him loose and moved back to look out my window. I wasn't going to talk to him for the rest of the ride. Let's see him get malaria and not come out the other end feeling a little paranoid.
"You're grounded, Summer," Oba-chan said.
I didn't answer, but she continued,
"You start the fight."
I took a big breath. I suppose she was right, but nobody ever thought about how hard it was for me to have Jazz for a brother. At last we reached the Parker's house. Ji-chan opened the car door, said,
"I die first,"
to Oba-chan, and got out, slamming the door. The sun hung above the horizon, a red ball like on the Japanese flag. That's what the sunrise always made me think of. Uh-oh, the sunrise today was after 6. We were late. I hoped we weren't in trouble already. The Parkers owned a good chunk of land. A whole acre was devoted just to their machines. I saw 4 combines that I knew they rented, 4 big rigs, semis, they owned, 2 camper trailers, one much bigger than the other, a tractor and grain cart, 4 grain trailers, 4 pickups, and a variety of trailers to load some of the equipment on. I knew a lot about those machines. The combines were hulking, bright green John Deeres. That's what most harvesters used. The cabs had 2 seats and the windows stretched from floor to roof. You drove on the right side instead of the left for some reason. Combine harvesters are kind of magical machines. This is what happens during harvest. When the wheat is ripe and ready to cut, the combines drive in an orderly fashion up and down through the wheat fields. In the front of the combine is a detachable apparatus called a header. The header cuts the crop as the combine moves forward. Then the insides of the combine separate the edible wheat from the inedible chaff, and then send the wheat into a bin on the back of the combine. The chaff drops to the ground where it stays to help fertilize the soil for next year. I don't know. I mean, maybe computers and cell phones and rocket ships are more magical, but to me, nothing beats the combine. That's just the way I see things. In a short time, the combine takes something humans can't use and then turns it into something that can feed us. So, the bins hold about 275 bushels of wheat. At the usual speed of 5 miles per hour, a combine can cut 600 or so bushels of wheat in an hour. There are a lot of variables, and I could be wrong because I'm so bad at math, but taking some average numbers, 600 bushels is more than 20,000 loaves of bread. To get the wheat grains out of the bin, the combine has an auger, which is a long, hollow, pipe-like contraption that pushes the wheat from one end of the auger to the other. The auger moves the wheat from the bin to a grain cart. A grain cart is attached to a tractor that pulls it up and down the fields. Neither the tractor nor the combine stops moving as the combine driver dumps wheat from the bin to the cart. Not stopping saves time, which is so, so important to harvesting. The grain has to be cut when it's just right. Stick with me. I'm almost done explaining what happens in the field. The grain cart holds 1,000 bushels. When it gets full, the tractor is driven to one of the grain trailers attached to the waiting big rigs, and its auger is used to dump the wheat from the cart into the trailer. When the trailer is full, the big rig takes the wheat to an elevator where the grain is stored until the farmer sells it. I learned all this when I was 7 and went on my first harvest. You know how there are some people who just love little kids and will take the time to explain anything to them? And then, of course, there are people who love their kids but pretty much ignore every other kid. Well, that year, my parents and grandparents worked for a couple who loved kids. All kids. So they let Jazz and me ride with anyone we wanted, whenever we wanted. Jazz still talks about that couple sometimes because they treated him like he was a normal kid, just kind of unusual. Sometimes I can look into the eyes of a grown-up and see the moment they realize Jazz is different. I still remember that I never saw that in these people's eyes. Wait, where was I? Oh yeah, so the grain elevators use systems of augers to move the wheat into the silos. If rain was coming, the process would continue until the early hours of the morning so that all the farmers could get their wheat in before the rain. Some elevators were even open 24/7. That's one job I would never want, operating an elevator. Sometimes employees would slip from ladders or walkways and end up suffocating beneath tons of grain. Also, the grain dust in the air could ignite easily. Before I was born, an elevator in Kansas exploded and killed 7 people. Another time, 6 more people died in an elevator explosion. Scary. Ji-chan told me that Mr. and Mrs. Parker had started out as combine drivers, then saved enough to qualify for a loan to buy their first big rig. Now they could afford to hire people like my family to drive the combines and trucks. If you were a custom harvester, you were the boss. But if you were a combine driver, you only worked for a custom harvester and didn't get paid much. My parents hoped to become custom harvesters one day, too. They would start out with 1 semi, or 2 if the bank would give them a big enough loan. Like us, the Parkers lived in farm country in a white A-frame house. But their house was a lot bigger. The front door of the main house was wide open. Thunder sniffed at the doorway. Ji-chan tried knocking, but no one answered, so he knocked harder. Oba-chan said, "Summer, you call hello. You talk best." She always said that. "Hello?" I called out. "Hello?" Nobody answered, but we could hear voices from inside. "Let's just go in," I told my grandparents.
"Oh, no," Ji-chan said. "Not polite." "Never go inside if nobody let you in," Oba-chan agreed.
"Then we're just gonna have to wait here," I said. "But the door's open. That means we can go inside. I'm sure it's okay."
"No, not the okay," Ji-chan said, shaking his head.
"Hello!" Jazz suddenly shrieked. There was an abrupt silence from inside, and then Mr. and Mrs. Parker came to the door.
"Toshiro, Yukiko, come in. You don't have to knock," Mrs. Parker said.
So we took off our shoes and entered. We were wearing running shoes that were identical except for being different sizes. The Parker's house was pretty inside. A wedding ring quilt, all in shades of pale blues and yellows and pinks, hung on the wall facing the front door. A quilt was one of 2 things I had always wanted. The other thing was a wicker chair for the front porch.
"What kind of girl wants a wicker chair?" my mother had asked when I'd told her that.
I knew why she said that. I mean, The other girls at school coveted smartphones. I would rather have had a wicker chair. Melody thought I was nuts. I loved the Parkers. They had one son, Robbie, but he was kind of boring. I guess I would play cards with him if I were desperate, but he wasn't interesting like his parents. Mrs. Parker was all business a lot of the time, but she was very kind, and if anyone got hurt, she was all over them like a Band-Aid. She was a large woman with a strong, caring face, the sort of face that made you like her right away because she was nice, but you knew you couldn't take advantage of her.
"Summer, you must have grown 3 inches," she exclaimed, giving me a hug.
"Yes," I said politely. "I think it's been exactly 3 inches since you last saw me." Mrs. Parker's hair was dark reddish, and she had the greenest eyes I'd ever seen. And Mr. Parker reminded me of the president or something, a man who chose to have the weight of the world on him.
"Great, you're here," Mr. Parker said, clapping his hands together once. "We were just talking through our plan for the north part of Harvest. Since we have only 1,000 acres in South Dakota, we can split up there. Some of us can go on to North Dakota."
I thought it was pretty nice of them not to mention that we were at least 30 minutes late. Everyone else was ready to go. It was weird because my grandparents were always saying it was important to be punctual, and they were always rushing around to be on time, but they were almost always late. Sometimes they would start getting ready for something before my parents started, and they would still be late. In fact, the only time I could remember them being on time for anything was for Jazz's meeting party. They had really wanted that day to be a success. We followed the Parkers into the kitchen, which was crowded with all the workers they'd hired. In the middle of the room was an island surrounded by stools with green cushions that said John Deere on them.
John Deere made stools? Lonnie, it's a little more than 1,000 acres in South Dakota, and there's a chance of finding more, Mrs. Parker gently argued, getting back to the discussion our arrival had interrupted. So can't we just plan not to have a plan?
I guess that's the same plan we have every year, Mr. Parker said, and everybody laughed.
I couldn't wait to get to the Badlands. I'd been there on 2 different harvesting trips.